Well, Naomi.
Well, Aaron.
I think it's time to start the show.
Oh my goodness.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sweater Weather, a podcast about Canadian arts and culture. I'm Aaron Giovannone, a writer in Calgary, Alberta.
And I'm Naomi Lewis, a writer in Calgary, Alberta.
Okay. I don't really like looking at the camera very much.
All right. We'll look at each other.
How do you feel our podcast is going so far overall?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm pretty excited about it, actually. I think that we're actually doing a great job here. It's really fun to go back and think about these examples of Canadian culture that were part of our youth, because we're starting in the 90s, which is when we were...
80s.
Okay, we're starting in the 80s, which is when we were children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty neat to go back and revisit those things, because they were just kind of there in the culture at the time. It was kind of impossible to avoid them. And of course, revisiting them as an adult, they seem very different.
Indeed.
Yes. For many reasons, partly the evolution of our brains and partly the evolution of the world, mm-hmm. society, and mm-hmm. expectations, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So,
Danger Bay is a good summertime show, and we are at the height of summer
here. It's very hot.
It's hot in Calgary.
Yes,
and that's why I'm wearing my Hawaiian shirt.
Because we might as well be in Hawaii.
I think we saw a couple of episodes of Danger Bay with people in Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, no doubt.
We have since we've kind of rebooted Sweater Weather, we have a few new patrons.
Yes.
It's kind of nice. We should thank them here, especially our kind of our first ones.
Yeah, which is?
One of them is my mother.
Margaret
Griffiths, longtime supporter of me and my work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the second one to join was my father, David Lewis.
Thanks, David.
Longtime supporter of my work.
That's right.
Yeah.
We have another patron too.
To thank. Yeah.
Friend and downstairs neighbor, Rod. Rod, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rod.
We're always talking to you about the stuff.
He's also a supporter of our work.
He is. He is very much a supporter of our work. We appreciate it very much.
Mm-hmm.
So for everybody else out there who wants to support Sweater Weather, you can do that. Do you know where they can do that, Naomi?
Patreon.
do you know the Patreon address yet?
No.
Patreon.com/Canadian Sweater.
Canadian Sweater.
That's where you can sign up for various levels, tiers and stuff, lots of different things available there. Basically, the major benefit that patrons get is they get the entire episode, right? Because the free version of the show may be 30, 40 minutes long, depending. That's about half. And the full version will be 60 to 80 minutes long. So
this is our third one. And then the first two, there's some pretty great stuff in that second part of the show.
That's right.
I wouldn't want people to miss that.
That's right. Patrons are enjoying the second half of the show. Check out. Yeah, so if you want to do that, of course, that'll be helping us out, keep the show like growing.
Which we would like to do, because we know it's going to get better and better.
We have big plans.
And we'd also really like to hear if people have ideas for episodes, right?
Yeah. We do, yeah. Send us an email, sweaterweatherpod@gmail.com. That's sweaterweatherpod@gmail.com. Yeah, we have big plans, don't we? We have a running Google Doc of about 80 episode topics right now of CanCon.
Yeah.
Of historical or popular importance.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good stuff there.
Can't wait to talk about it.
And we are looking for new ideas, too. So if you have suggestions and ideas for the show, feel free to send us a message. On any of our socials, we're on all the social medias, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is already plural.
All
the social mediums.
Media.
Mediums.
Whatever.
What are your initial impressions of Danger Bay?
When I first saw it, I was new to Canada.
Okay.
And I didn't really, my family moved to Ottawa when I was seven, mm-hmm. in 1983, so... Mm-hmm. I was still pretty new to Canada when the show started. I didn't really know where Vancouver was or anything like that. And I don't think I really registered that it was particularly Canadian. In my brain, I hadn't really distinguished between Canadian and American yet.
You didn't understand national boundaries quite yet.
No, and I was often kind of like, oh, is this Canadian? Is this not? Like, it was, you know, like the fact that Mr. Rogers was American and Mr. Dressup was Canadian. I was just kind of confused by it all. So,
Mr. Dressup, future topic of Sweater Weather.
Yes. Vancouver was just as far away as anywhere else. Why am I talking about this? I don't know. Because this time going back, we've been to Vancouver. Sure. We've been to the Vancouver Aquarium together.
Which features prominently in the show.
Yeah, which features... I mean, it's set at the Vancouver Aquarium, essentially. That's there. That's where he works.
We're there almost every episode.
Yeah, and that's where the main character works.
Yeah.
Dr. Grant Roberts.
Roberts.
And some of the animal characters that appear in the show, we've seen their kind, if not them specifically.
Their species.
Their species, their offspring, shall we say.
Maybe
their
genus.
Progeny.
We had a good time at the Vancouver Aquarium.
Yeah, we did.
The otter exhibit, is that the right word? The otter tank?
The otter...
It seems weird to say exhibit.
Habitat?
Habitat, that's the word. It was great, very cute.
Loved the otters.
Very much.
And the otters appear like several times throughout the series, so that's great. And then, of course... So one thing that really struck me about the series is this time is that they really want you to come away with, they're really advocating for something, which is essentially animal rights and like seeing animals as like sentient beings that deserve consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really interesting to see on the screen, but it's also like a bit problematic the way they do it in some ways, because sometimes they make stuff up to convince the viewer that the animals are worthy of such consideration.
I feel like this is a show well before the internet, so people couldn't like verify some of the facts they were throwing out there at times. It just seems they wanted to hammer the point home that animals are important.
Yeah, but they don't shy away from just blatantly...
They fictionalize freely.
Yes.
For entertainment's sake.
And then another interesting thing about the animal rights... slant is that you often see them eating animals. See, like in one episode that we saw, the characters were very concerned about the well-being of this eel that was accidentally injured, or accidentally on purpose injured, and it was like their friend who was an eel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that same episode, you see them eating a fish.
A salmon.
Yeah. Right. And so I was like, well, why? Like, I'm just curious, why is the eel a person with a name and the salmon is dinner?
Good question.
And in another episode, they're arguing about something to do with, I can't even remember what animal. Oh, I think it's the same one. And you see one of the characters angrily pounding out some meat with a tenderizer because she's so upset about treatment of an animal.
That's right. Well, that was presumably a cow, a land animal.
Yeah, so
they're
they're
just not as cool as the marine animal.
That's the lesson of the show. I just have to scratch my head a few times in there where I'm like, well, why?
Right. There are, the ethics.
It's not exactly consistent or...
That's right.
Truthful, but that's okay.
From today's point of view, too, like, for this is a kind of a show that was meant to have an environmentalist message and an animal activist, animal rights message.
Yeah.
That certainly would violate that. Pretty much watching the show, I'm sure no animal rights advocate today would like what they're seeing.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Is that there's animals in every episode, and like, those animal actors, like, how are they being cajoled into performing, one has to wonder.
Yeah, watching this show, we noticed that, okay, so the formula for, we'll get into some of the details of Danger Bay's production in a minute. Just maybe off the top here, we'll say there's a formula for a good Danger Bay episode.
Mm-hmm.
We realized after watching several of them now. The best kind of Danger Bay episode is it has an animal, it features an animal, or an environmental issue. But the best ones have an animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids, Dr. Grant, the main character, and his two kids, They have an adventure.
And Jonah.
That's right. Nicole and Jonah, the two kids, and then JL, a pilot, girlfriend, eventual wife of Dr. Grant, is also often in the mix, flying a plane somewhere. So all those people, they have an adventure.
You forgot one. Dr. Grant's boss, George, at the aquarium.
George, that's his name. That's right.
Yeah, he's often involved in the adventure as well.
Right. So animal plus adventure equals good Danger Bay episode.
Yeah.
Right? But what we noticed is that, so a lot of the episodes we're watching feature live wild animal actors. Whether it's an otter or a monkey, like an orangutan, or
wildcat.
A wild, like a
mountain lion.
And these are, these are in the 80s way, the way you might have seen on Johnny Carson when, I don't know, was it Jack Hanna, the famous zoologist, zookeeper, would bring out the animals on display. They would be acting with animals. And actually, an interview with the actor who played Dr. Grant, we'll talk about him in a little bit, Donnelly Rhodes. He mentioned how frequently he was bit. He was bit and injured very frequently by the animal, I guess you call them actors.
Really?
Yeah, on the show. So that was happening all the time. And so watching it now, we realize, wow, they used a lot of real animals. That's something that, you know, PETA wouldn't like, animal activists wouldn't like today. And that has definitely fallen out of fashion or maybe even practice altogether. Because, of course, with digital technology, they kind of work in wild animals to movies where mm-hmm. they might need them quite often. When you see an animal in a movie now, a live animal, it's a domestic animal usually. It's like a dog. That's a big thing about Danger Bay. It really relies on animals to be interesting, we've noticed.
Yeah.
So there are other episodes where it's like interpersonal romantic themes.
Fewer animals
and they're not... The show doesn't really work. The show really doesn't work without the animals, no. So...
And, like, often I found myself wishing for more animal, less human.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're like, well, I'd rather be looking at a very cute otter right now
yes.
than watching, like, I don't know, JL's, like, wooden wooden acting as
yeah.
she...
The acting's not good in this show.
Right.
It's fair to say.
Let's not be too hard on it, but...
It's not great.
right. So, Danger...
Except for the animal actors.
The animal actors are all great. We love them all. I'm sure yeah. they're all still alive and working 40 years later.
Yeah.
So you mentioned already Danger Bay is in Vancouver, and that's another part. Okay, when you see a lot of scenery, like the ocean and the forest or whatever of Vancouver and thereabouts, that makes for a great Danger Bay episode too,
mm-hmm.
because that's a really big appeal of the show. When I was a kid in Canada, born and raised, like in Southern Ontario, Niagara countryside, seeing this seemed very exotic to me.
Right.
Like it's the ocean.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And so that was like a side of Canada, a coast of Canada, I had no experience of at all. And so it was kind of neat. I think the same appeal that a foreign viewer, a non-Canadian,
totally.
Would be like, wow, Canadian wilderness is beautiful. That was actually kind of how
yeah, because Canada's so huge.
Yeah, exactly.
But then also, I feel like they don't quite explain on the show, like, where, like, is Danger Bay is a place? Or, like,
right.
where is it?
And so Danger Bay, the
name of the
show.
Are they in Vancouver, or is Danger Bay another place?
Yeah, what? So I think it's that they work in, so it's Vancouver Aquarium. So that's mm-hmm. the real place in Vancouver, and they mention Vancouver here and there. But then they also mention that the family, the Grant family, they have a house in some place called Danger Bay. That's fictional. The real Danger, in the opening sequence of the show, there's like an aerial shot of a, like a fancy house
yeah.
on an island.
Yeah.
It seems like an island or on a little coast or, what that place really is some place called Lone Rock Point.
Okay.
Which is in Vancouver or near Vancouver. So it's, Danger Bay is a fictional name for a small town on the outskirts of Vancouver.
Okay, so the idea is that they don't live in Vancouver, but they go there every day to
yeah,
go to the
it's within commuting distance
okay.
for Dr. Grant.
And they probably basically. Go there in a boat.
They never see them.
Or a helicopter.
No, actually, you know...
you see him driving his truck.
He's always... Not a truck.
Jeep.
Very much a
yeah.
Jeep. The Jeep is important because
yeah.
it's there all the time. And again, in the opening sequence, there's Dr. Grant driving across a bridge. I'm not
yeah,
sure what bridge
right.
it is.
Presumably the bridge from Danger Bay to Vancouver.
That's right. Going to work. Got to get to work.
Yeah.
And there's an eel who needs me in the aquarium this morning. Just speeding open air when, you know, wind blowing through his hair. This is great. This
yeah,
is great.
Yeah. Can I just mention one, like, very interesting thing about this show is that Dr. Grant goes to work every day at the aquarium, and he appears to bring his two kids with him.
Yes.
Jonah and Nicole. They're always there.
They're always involved.
And they are assigned tasks at the aquarium as though they were employees.
Sort of. I mean, they're volunteers or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there's volunteers who work at the Vancouver Aquarium.
Yeah, but they don't seem to be very many employees, because whenever there's something important to do, he sends his kids off to do it.
Well, you see, Dr. Grant, not only is he a great marine biologist, mm-hmm. he's also a terrific dad, and he wants to involve his kids in everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
Danger Bay, when did it run? We're talking about the 80s, right? So it premiered October 8th, 1984. They produced a total of 123 episodes. That's six seasons worth until 1990. Now, it was a co-production of CBC and the Disney Channel.
Okay.
So it broadcast in the United States on the Disney Channel.
Oh, it did?
Yep. So
okay.
So they had a big American audience, and it was the biggest, it was the most popular show on the Disney Channel for some of those years.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was also, for the CBC, the best-selling foreign property. So the CBC sells its shows abroad to other like networks. It ended up being broadcast in 72 other countries. You can see it. You can see the show now as where we watched it on the Canadian Media Fund's Encore Plus YouTube channel. So basically, the Canadian Media Fund, I guess, they have the rights to many of the shows and movies that they've funded over the decades at this point. And so they're on, and that includes Danger Bay. And so that's where you can see Danger Bay now in pretty good quality. So that's kind of nice. That's kind of nice. Do you know anything about the Paul Saltzman or Peter Dixon that created the show? Peter Dixon was a television writer. He had worked on Knight Rider, 21 Jump Street. Mm. So typical, like kind of big 80s shows in the States. He wrote some episodes of Danger Bay as well. I don't have much more information about Peter Dixon, but Paul Saltzman, he was really the mover and shaker of the two. And so he's born in 1943. He's the son of Percy Saltzman. He's the first, so his dad was the first English language weatherman in Canada. So he was an on-air personality. He also would host news programs on CBC. So he was born into show business, Canadian show business. And Paul Saltzman himself, he's very much like a 60s generation guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he was an activist involved in voting rights in Mississippi in 1960, in the early 1960s, mid-1960s. In 1968, he was working for the NFB, the National Film Board, on documentary films. He traveled to India to make a documentary film with a crew. And while there, he fell in with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Oh, okay.
So very important figure in the counterculture of the time. And so while he was there,
the Beatles hung out with that guy.
Well, Paul took several photographs of the Beatles.
Oh.
Famous photographs. These photos were reprinted in the international press, and they became famous.
Oh.
This was like his big debut, was photographing the Beatles in India.
I feel like I've seen those photos.
You've probably seen them. Today, they've been in shows, museum displays and stuff. Today, they're on permanent display at the Liverpool Airport.
Oh.
And then even recently, just a few years ago, he made a documentary film about his time in India and his encounter with the Beatles. And so this 60s experience is like very much an important part of Paul Saltzman's like life and identity.
Okay, and so, and presumably animal rights was part of that.
I think it was a big part of getting the show made, mm-hmm. is that you have to have often a social purpose for what you're mm-hmm. pitching, especially when government funding's involved and you're like, well, what are you teaching kids? What are you teaching the populace with the show? So basically after he came back from India, like in the 70s, he produced and directed a lot of documentaries. He's really well known and respected, I think, as like a producer.
Okay.
A guy who could really find money mm-hmm. and make deals. And this was a pretty high budget show, Danger Bay. It cost a lot of money.
Yeah, must have.
They're flying helicopters around.
Yeah, every episode.
Boats, hovercraft. I mean, there's all kinds of stunts.
There must be tons of stunt performers in there too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then in 1984 he co-created and co-produced Danger Bay. While he was doing like promotion for the show before its release, he thought Danger Bay was, quote, an antidote to death-filled television where 16 people get killed in an hour.
Mm.
Yeah.
Although there is some death in Danger Bay, as we
there's plenty of death.
Couldn't help but notice while you're watching it. There's surprisingly, you often see dead animals.
They show you dead animals.
Yeah.
They'll show you like a dead whale. I mean, it's a model. It's some sort of model.
Presumably, it's not a real dead animal, but it's still distressing.
Yeah, I don't. It's an interesting choice. I mean, it's an interesting choice from our point of view today.
Yeah.
In the 80s, I guess there'd be no real problem.
Because we're thinking of it as a kid show, and we're thinking,
yeah,
whoa.
Kids gotta know the grim reality of death.
Apparently. I mean, there was that one episode we watched with the otter mom and baby.
Yep.
Where the otter mother, they know, has a heart condition and doesn't have long to live. And they're worried that the mother will die before the baby is fully weaned.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to find another lactating otter. And I think there's a pretty funny line where Grant's like, we need a lactating otter!
Screaming it to the heavens.
Yeah. And through the whole episode, I was like really scared that at any moment they're going to show us the mom just like suddenly sink to the bottom of the pool. And basically, we saw
a floating dead otter body.
Yeah,
they showed, they like zoomed in on it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay. Wow, you can hear the cries of grief of children all across North America in 1986, whenever that was shown.
Oh, my goodness. But you know what's funny is I also don't remember as a child having been distressed watching the show.
I don't think I was either.
I mean, the last couple of days we watched a bunch of episodes. We saw a dead sack containing a dead dog in a sack and a bloody sack.
This was episode two of the series. They had to put down a dog. A grisly old sailor had a rabid dog. This is a bizarre story, but anyway, so it turns out that the sailor briefly lands in Vancouver. His dog gets off the boat and bites Nicole, Dr. Grant's daughter. And then they fear the dog is rabid. It turns out the dog is rabid. But while chasing down the man and his dog on a boat, they get in a helicopter. No, are they in a plane? No, they're in a helicopter.
Boat. They have a plane and there's a helicopter
going. There's a helicopter. There's a hovercraft. And they're like searching all over, like up and down the coastline for a dog.
Yeah. Well, the dog is rabid. It's kind of like it's an emergency.
Yes. The state like activates all functions possible for the safety of the populace in this particular episode. Anyway, then the old sailor, he gets bitten by his rabid dog too, and he's sad.
And he sees the foam.
Yeah, so they cut away. It's like a long shot of the boat. Then I hear the gunshot.
Yeah.
And the fisherman has killed the dog. And the next scene you have, he's carrying around a bloody bundle. You can see blood on the sheets that he's wrapped his dog's body. And he puts it down and this like bloody bundle is in frame like for a whole scene.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of...
It's wild. Excuse me for laughing. It's just like this.
It's shocking.
It is
shocking. To us, to our in the 80s. Sensibilities. And then there's the poor dead otter mom.
Yeah.
The poor little otter baby floating there all alone. And then there's also a dead whale.
Mm-hmm.
Barnacles on its hide and everything. But it's interesting, though, he says this is an antidote to violence. Because, like, the humans are very kind to each other. That is one thing about the show, is the humans are so nice. There's really, even when there appears to be an antagonist who might have a bit of malice or something, it turns out that they meant well, usually. Not always, always.
Yeah. So, well, this is more from Paul Saltzman promoting the show. While Doc's actions stem from compassion, this won't be a soft show.
Mm.
The audience will be engrossed because the characters have a real passion for their work.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. I mean, this is a show about workaholic professional class people. These are highly moral, highly motivated, and they're goody two-shoes, basically.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah, and it's about Dr. Grant, who's one of these, teaching his kids to be like that as well, I think.
His kids are like saints.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It's a problem for being interested in the characters, because they are all just they're perfect.
But then, like I said, an antagonist will come in, and yeah, they're usually just misguided. Sometimes they're actually... evil, have, you know, malicious intent.
Yeah, yeah.
But often not. But, like, even then, the kids are kind of come in as the voice of reason and are able to help these poor misguided people often. When there's someone in trouble or someone who's just kind of, you know, been on the wrong path, the kids are often involved in, like, gently helping them.
We talked about Donnelly Rhodes, who's playing Doc Grant. He's, like, he's on screen so much. I think he got really, really tired of filming the show by the end of it. It's something that I came across in interviews with him. So Donnelly Rhodes, he was from Winnipeg. He was born in 1937. His father abandoned his family. His mother was a journalist and a playwright. She was the first woman in Winnipeg to cover the City Hall beat.
Hmm.
And so Rhodes got into acting right away. He was, I guess he did a drama school in Winnipeg, and then he went to the National Theatre School in Montreal. And he had a long and eclectic career as a character actor in Hollywood. He had guest appearances on all of the big shows of the 80s and 70s. So he was on Cheers, Murder, She Wrote, Magnum P.I. He would have like one or two episode arcs on those. He moved from L.A. to Vancouver for Danger Bay, and ended up remaining there. Donnelly Rhodes got married 6 times in his life.
Really?
He died in 2018 at the age of 81. So
six times.
He's a handsome man.
Yeah.
He was a handsome man. You see him age a lot, Train Danger Bay. Because I think he would have been, say, in his late 40s, beginning of Danger Bay, and then, you know, maybe his early 50s by the end of it. But he never stopped working, really, because after Danger Bay, it was a few years later, but he ended up on Da Vinci's Inquest, that police procedural.
Yeah, yeah.
And that ran from 98 to 2005, and he had a co-starring role on as a grumpy detective. Did you ever see Da Vinci's
Inquest? Never saw it.
It's going to be a future episode of Sweater Weather. And he was also on the sci-fi series Battlestar Galactica, where he played the smoking doctor. I mean, you're a big Battlestar fan, aren't
you? Yeah.
You know the doctor who smoked all the time? You don't remember, right?
I guess I don't remember.
Oh. Well, we're going to have to do Battlestar Galactica, too. These are all filmed in Vancouver, all these shows.
Yeah, but there's that kind of Canadian. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of Canadian actors on it, and it was filmed in Vancouver, and it had Canadian film credits. So it is a good question, like, what counts as Canadian?
Yeah.
One of the reasons we don't think of Battlestar Galactica as a Canadian is because it wasn't originally a Canadian story, right?
Right.
It had an earlier, it was a movie.
The X-Files was filmed in Vancouver, too.
That's true.
We don't think of that as Canadian.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Yeah. I mean, there's a formula. Mm-hmm. There's a formula that I don't know, Telefilm or Canadian Media Fund follow to determine if something counts as Canadian or how Canadian is it, and then that's how much money they can get.
But I mean, is it set in Canada, I think, is a good question.
That's one of the criteria. Yeah,
because like Danger Bay really has a Canadian vibe. Even the goody-goodiness of it is kind of Canadian in flavor.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Dr. Grant's daughter, Nicole Grant, is played by Ocean Hellman. Her full name, you ready for this? Is Crystal Ocean Supri Heavenly Blue Sky Hellman.
Oh my goodness.
She's from Victoria. She is no longer an actress. Okay. The son is played by Christopher Crabbe. All right. So
there's an ocean and
there's
a crab.
An ocean and a crab on this show that's all about the sea.
Interesting.
I feel like there was unconscious bias on the part of casting directors when they're like reading the names, like, whoa, this person's meant for the role.
Although like Ocean Hellman had so many other names, like maybe she just picked Ocean the show.
You know, it's a good technique if you want. It's good to have a lot of names.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you can choose to highlight the one that's the best in the situation you're in.
Yeah, like if she was going to be on a show about birds, she could have picked Blue Sky.
That's right. So Christopher Crabbe was born in Toronto. His father was an American opera singer who performed at the Stratford Festival. He stayed in Canada and then would perform, and then I guess as a vaudevillian actor in the Muskoka Cottage Country.
Oh, neat.
Christopher Crabbe, something interesting about him too, is he was a semi-professional tennis player. His highest achievement was that he once defeated the number 300, the 300th player.
300th ranked player?
In the world.
Wow.
He beat him once. Crabbe lives in Hollywood and acts still. At different times, he's tried to lead a reboot of Danger Bay.
Oh, and what happened? It didn't work.
Well, it wouldn't work today. You know, as we said...
Oh, because they couldn't have animals.
Well, you can't. It just seems like that formula would not work. The formula for the best Danger Bay show, like we mentioned, with the live animals, it wouldn't work today. It just wouldn't.
I wonder how... Yeah, I guess it's just not going to happen.
That's right.
Alas.
Now, dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun.
The Danger Bay theme song is a real earworm.
Sure.
So patron neighbor Rod mentioned in an online comment that it was unforgettable and that he actually had his own, for time, Canadian history podcast. And it was their theme song. They used it.
What?
Yeah. In 2011, Canadian rapper Classified wrote a song called Danger Bay that doesn't just sample the theme song, but is actually like a remix of the theme
really?
Song. The whole song is like the Danger Bay theme in the
God.
Background, but remixed. Yeah.
Can we listen to it?
You want to listen to it now?
Yeah.
All right. Our audience won't be able to listen to it for copyright reasons, but we can listen to it. Here goes. Welcome to Danger Bay. All right.
Oh.
So,
So, that was great.
Welcome to Danger Bay. I mean,
that was his version of Danger Bay that he was describing was a much darker place than Danger Bay.
Yeah, so he classified lists the ills of society.
Yeah.
How materialistic we are, how superficial, how, I mean, later on in the song, there's like samples of like Hurricane Katrina, like news announcements and like, or 9/11. So it's just like, I guess you'd call it Jeremiah against modern society in a way. Yeah. So.
Well, interesting. That's not what Danger Bay is about, but that's okay.
I don't think he mentions animals even once.
I mean, it's like the opposite message. Well, on the show, the message is all about love and like hope and all bonding together as humans and animals.
That's right.
Danger Bay is a place of love and benevolence.
Thanks for watching or listening to this free version of Sweater Weather on Danger Bay. If you want to get the full version of this episode, so that's an extra 30 or 40 minutes, that's basically twice the content, become a subscriber to the show over on patreon.com/Canadian Sweater. You can sign up at different tiers, you get different benefits, the main one being access to all full-length episodes of Sweater Weather. And of course, if you subscribe to the show, you'll be helping us out and you'll earn also our eternal gratitude. Thanks again.